Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Donna Smith Moncrief, who is the author of Medium 7, Evidence of the Afterlife and Predictions. This is a very interesting book. Donna has interviewed some very talented mediums and done some scientific inquiry into what is actually going on, what are the things that we can change in order to get more accurate readings, and the various variables, not only of the spirit communicators, the discarnates, the medium herself or himself, and then also the sitter, the person being read for. And in my experience, these are all great points and things that need to be looked into for us to understand this really misunderstood topic of spirit communication. Welcome, Donna. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, and thanks for having me, Dr. Kolb. Happy to be here.
Well, I guess we'll start off with you telling our listening audience a little bit about how you became interested in this topic. You have studied a great deal about physics and metaphysics, and then going on to these more scientific inquiries.
Yes. So, just a little bit of history about myself. So, I have 20 years background in scientific research, but actually more to do with criminology and the health field. And but of course, growing up, had a lot of my own spiritual experiences. And I think for me, the milestone for trying to apply my scientific background to this area of research was when I had accompanied a friend simply to see a medium. And at that time, almost 15 years ago, at that time I was just doing it for entertainment. I thought I would find out a bit of information about the future. And voila, this medium started talking about my grandmother being standing beside me. And she was able to name my grandmother's name, which is an unusual name. It's an English name, and it sounds like Beryl. And there's no way she could have known that. There was no internet at the time. She described her cause of death, diabetes, and started to talk about which leg was amputated and what she was doing now. And for me, from then on, it sparked a great need, a voracious appetite to start to look at this more systematically. And that's when I started to start documenting information, and really in 2010 began to systematically conduct this 2.5-year study on mediums.
Well, how did you find your mediums to study?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked that, because I think, when you you Google psychics on the internet,
right,
it would appear that they're everywhere.
Right.
But they're really not. And I used what would be called in social sciences called the snowball technique, which is really, of course, we don't have necessarily a list of mediums that you could take a random sample from. I mm-hmm. used references from people, and as I began to get names, I began to test those mediums. And perhaps out of the 30 mediums I tested, only 10 were eligible for the study. Because what we want our listeners to understand is people may feel that they're mediums and may have psychic phenomena, because we all are spiritual beings, and we'll learn when we become aware that we do have different levels of psychic ability. But what we in scientific studies of mediums, you have to have test mediums, and there's certain things that they need to be able to do. And so if they are able to pass the Medium 7 assessment tool, and were able to consent to having their participants contacted or be part of double-blind studies, then I allowed them to come into the research. And so it was through that kind of technique that I was able to get them. And only 5, I don't know if you've noticed with the book, I was only even still able to thoroughly talk about the 5 in the book, because 5 weren't interested in publicity. They know what they do, but they're not interested in any kind of fame or anybody mm-hmm. contacting them for professional services.
So let's talk a little bit about the study design and what you were looking at in the studies.
Okay, so there's various levels of scientific rigor in this, because it is not very easy first of all, to get people to participate in these kinds of studies. As we said, it's a controversial knowledge, but let me just share with you one of the more rigorous designs that was used. And let me step back a bit. I mentioned the Medium 7 assessment tool, and that was developed through focus groups. So first of all, just being able to have a diverse group of people, including skeptics, who would say, you know, you ask them, what do you need to see in a reading with a medium to be able to know that this is authentic? And the top three things that came out of these focus groups were that, first of all, they had to be able to name a name, because a name for them is, there's no way somebody can identify a name without knowing them. And second one is being able to identify the cause of death or the illness that plagued the person, the deceased person, throughout their life. And third, such unique and relevant specific information that no one else could know. These were the top three things, and those were built into the tool. And if a medium was able to hit on these things within the time of the experiment, they were given higher level scores, whereas low level scores are things like that where you hear from a medium, very general, you know, your mother is with us, she loves you. That is almost considered no evidence, because there's no way we could validate that. So these various levels of evidence, this tool was used. And so, for example, a double-blind study would include, for our listeners who may not know that term, that's the type of term that indicates that the medium wouldn't know anything about the sitter or the client that's coming to see them, and myself, the researcher, would not know anything about the client, and a third party would actually be recruiting these individuals. And throughout the sitting, the medium would proceed to provide information, and that would be scored using the tool. And so that would be one of the more rigorous types of methods used.
Okay. And what were some of the variables that you found that were important in the different aspects of, or the different people involved in this, including the discarnates?
Yeah. No, and that's I believe you're referring to the area of the book where I talk about the different variables that will enhance accurate knowledge. And I was really inspired to talk about this, because throughout the research, there's so much confusion, which is one of the things that made me want to look at this systematically. So for one, you would actually hear the same medium mention, as I said, my grandmother's name. And then why would she not be able to say the name again and only say the letter B? These things made me realize that there are about many factors that contribute to accuracy in a reading. And it goes beyond the actual credibility of the actual medium. So to summarize it briefly here, I categorize them in terms of three different levels. So there's some factors that relate to the medium, some factors that relate to the spirit world, and some factors that relate to the sitter. So if I were to pick one about the medium themselves, as I mentioned before, they have to have certain qualities that allow them to be so open to the spirit world that they're able to communicate what we call evidential mediumship, those types of factors that let us know that we're able to validate and test or research later to determine whether it's true. But let's go and talk about, for example, some of the variables related to the actual spirit world. Many people don't understand that discarnates, and I think you mentioned the term, but for our listeners who may not know that concept, that's just basically a soul without a physical body. When they come through to a medium, they decide. They are the ones who decide who comes through, when they come through, and what they'd like to talk about. And this is so important for researchers and laypersons to understand that it's not something that you can necessarily replicate. And in our world of science, that's actually a fact that determines whether something is scientific or not. So you can run a research experiment again and find that some of that information, that discarnate, may not come through because you can't beckon them. And what's interesting, and just a slight digression to qualify this, is if you this happened exactly with the Long Island medium who has been certified by Forever Living Family Foundation, and is a very popular medium. She went on to Letterman, and Letterman immediately asked her, says, "I want to talk to Uncle Joe," and she was completely thrown off. And of course, to skeptics public, that would of course make her mm-hmm. look like, of course, this is a phony, because some people believe that the show is scripted and here she is live with Letterman and she can't bring through
right.
on the whole show. And that's why I explained that people have to understand that the spirit world, they determine, because they have a larger picture of what our spiritual
yeah.
Our spiritual causes and what our purpose is. And sometimes we might want to talk about something, but they have something more important to tell us.
Right. Yeah, that's very important to know.
Yeah. And the other thing I really want to share about the spirit world before I talk about the variables related to the sitter is with the spirit world, and we get this information from the rich history we have from our 18th century mediums, some excellent
mm-hmm.
literature on what they can tell us about the studies that they've done with discarnates that they, well, while they were living, they maybe discussed a code word, for example, that they were going to bring through when they went to the afterlife. And I talk
mm-hmm.
about a case in my book about that. But there's much research and literature that indicates that discarnates, depending on their abilities when they get to the physical plane, do not have the ability to communicate. Now, that's similar to when we're born in this physical world. We have to learn
mm-hmm.
to walk, talk, we have to learn to read. And in some cases, depending on how many times an individual soul has reincarnated, they have to get somebody else to bring them through because they don't know how to lower their vibrational frequency. They don't know how to communicate with the other side. And that's not the case for all discarnates, but for some.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, that's the reason why someone might see a medium and not understand why their mother or their loved one has not come through for several years and why Aunt Jo can. And so these variables, again, I go back to the research, we have to be careful how we make these assumptions about
yeah, the I have a... I'm sorry, I have a little story to tell that illustrates that. There was a spirit here in our center. We have a 10,000 square foot surgery center that was always here until, I mean, he's not here now, but he was here for many years, and anybody who was stealing or anybody that was, you know, even thinking about stealing would see the ghost. And sometimes
wow.
the ghost would have a real scary face and the person had run out of here. It was really funny. So the ghost, again, I mean, at least 40 people saw the ghost. I only saw the ghost once, and it was in broad daylight. He was walking. There was nobody in the building except me, and he was walking down the hall with his back toward me, like way down the hall. I just saw his back, and then he walked through the wall, walked through the door. When he walked through the door, I realized it wasn't a physical person, but he looked like a physical person. And I asked him, his name was Ken, and he had actually died in the building. He was a insurance person. The building was an insurance company before it became a surgery center. He had died in the building. And one night, my nurse in charge was walking about 3 a.m. down the hall, and she looked in my exam room, and he was sitting there. And of course, she jumped, and he jumped, and then later on, she was interviewing somebody who had actually worked with him, and that person described him to a T because she had
wow.
seen him. And then I asked Ken, how could he write on walls? That's why I said, Ken, how can you write on walls?
Right.
You know, that's pretty good. I mean, not walls, but glass. There's glass
right.
Glass walls, you know. So he would write on the wall, and the point of the writing was to scare the people. One person who was stealing, he was trying to get him to leave. And he told me that he had been a shaman in a former life. This is through a medium that
right.
he told me.
Yes.
He told me that he had been a shaman in a former life and therefore had these skills. And that he told me that he really liked me and that he would even go home with me. And he would be in my house because other shamans who worked with me would see him in my house. And so I had him hang out with me for about 10 years. And then later he left. Isn't that interesting? But,
and
you know, the alarm would go off for no reason. Like, you know, the motion detector would go off, and so the alarm would go off. And I think that was very protective. I think when somebody was thinking about maybe, you know, entering the center illegally or something, that the alarm would go off inside, and then, of course, they would go away because the alarm's going off. Police were coming.
I think
so. We had a great deal of spiritual protection here.
Well, that's an amazing story because it first, I think you're very lucky that the ghost wanted to come home with you, especially if he's
a good ghost. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't aware of him. And Ken said he could not always determine who saw him and who didn't see him unless he wanted to be seen. You know, if he wanted to be seen, he could be seen. And it was in broad daylight, too, and he would scare people. His purpose was to scare people who were trying to do me harm.
Which was
very interesting. Yeah,
that's quite amazing, and I think that story actually then demonstrates again the fact that he did come with these other skills, and this whole fact that in reincarnation,
yeah, exactly,
that we do carry forward different skills, and so that is something that we need to understand is that when we go onto our new physical plane, we may not be able to, we may do things differently than others, and when researchers are testing certain things, they have to be open to the fact, for example, that not all mediums will bring through a name, or they may not bring through the discarnate that they want at that particular time.
Right, exactly. The
third one, though, I wanted to share, not to forget, was sort of give the listeners at least one variable that relates to them, because sitters often, and these are clients that see mediums, often don't think that they have anything to do with their reading. They think that this is just all whether the medium is credible or not, or whether the phenomena is credible. But it's so important that people understand energy and the concept of energy and vibrations, and their vibrational frequency and where they are. So, for example, if they're depressed or they're really feeling skeptical about this, their vibrational frequency is lower. And they attract that kind of energy to the whole process, whereas someone who is open-minded, even though they might be skeptical, their vibrational frequency is a bit higher. And to understand how that discarnate is communicating, if they are lowering their vibrational frequency, the medium is increasing their vibrational frequency, and all of those levels need to connect well to enhance how much information comes through, how accurate it is, how relevant it is. And so it's something for a sitter to think about when they're communicating, when they're coming to see a medium.
And one of the most important things in your book is the different ways in which mediums actually get information. It's not just one way. And would you like to talk about the different ways that the mediums say they got information, and also the importance of when they get symbols, not of over-interpreting the symbols?
Oh, sure, yes, that's so important as well. And yeah, and so with the 10 mediums, that was one of the things that I wanted to bring out in the book, is to really help people understand that they all have different ways of communicating and using this energy with discarnates. I think the top three of the 10 mediums in the book was clairvoyance, which is the French word for clear seeing, clairsense, mm-hmm. clear feeling. I'll define them in one moment, and clear audience, the ability to hear clearly. And in the book, I found that some mediums, more of them, use what they call indirect clairvoyance, which means that they look through, they see discarnates and through their third eye of the chakra. So they're not actually seeing the physical body that we would see. And then there's mm-hmm. some others that actually clearly comes through for them. They actually see, just like you saw that ghost very clearly,
mm-hmm.
They actually see, for example, the discarnate. And one of the mediums shared, I think it was Carolyn Mulner, she had indicated that, which I thought was another fascinating part with mediums, is that she who experiences indirect clairvoyance indicated that she actually was starting to, for example, see one in the physical form, and she said to spirit that she never wants to experience that. And from her perspective, you can negotiate with the spirit mm-hmm. world what you want to experience in this lifetime, what you plan to do with your abilities. And so it seems like from her perspective, and John Pothias as well in the book, he's a medical intuitive, felt that he mm-hmm. has made certain agreements that he won't do certain things and he will do certain things. And then there's clairsentience, and this is a very important one, and I think Bro Perkins brought this through very well in his case study, and that's the feeling, the clear feeling. And a lot of the times the spirit world, the best way for our listeners to understand this is that they don't communicate the same way we do with words, and so sometimes they know the medium may not understand, for example, a medical condition. because are not necessarily doctors, most likely not.
Right. Yeah.
So communicate the actual medical feeling that the discarnate that the sitter is going to need to understand is they literally make the medium go through the feeling. And I explained that to Bro Perkins prior to seeing a client. He started to feel like he couldn't breathe. He started to feel like he was choking. And he almost had to cancel the appointment because he thought he would literally need to call 911 as soon as he opened the door and started to, because he decided to let the client in. The client was knocking. The client began to, as soon as they began to talk and talk about who was potentially there, he realized that it started to lessen, and that was the way that the discarnate was able to bring through the medical condition to validate consider, this is how your father died. Describe it so well that immediately the sitter had known who was who he was talking about. But Bro had indicated he would not, once he got talking and in the post analysis for this research, and the sitter actually named the medical condition for me in it, the interview, Bro said there's no way I would have been able to get that go through the feeling and the pain that I was having. And so that's clairsentience, and clairaudience is the hearing. So some mediums, such as, for example, Doris Stokes was known for this, they just hear information. It's like whispers through the ear, and that's a strength more than, let's say, the seeing, and they use that. And some of them use them all together.
I wanted to interrupt just for a second. I interviewed Maureen Rayner, who is a psychic detective, and this poor woman, she feels all of the feelings of the victim of the murder, and then she feels all of the feelings of the killer, and it's exhausting for her, but that's how she works. And she was so excited to talk to me about medical stuff because, you know, the criminology stuff was so old hat to her. She's real excited about the medical stuff. So,
yeah, I know.
But that poor woman really, I mean, she was describing what she feels. Can you imagine feeling both of those sides of the crime? It's incredible.
Now that's absolutely incredible, and I'm glad you actually brought that up, because even John Pothia talks about that, who is a medical intuitive and goes inside the body, sees the colors and that kind of thing. And mediums talk about that all the time. Either he said it was exhausting, and some that also had participated. And I don't talk about it a lot, but physical mediumship, those kinds of are exhausting, materializing the discarnate through the use of ectoplasm, for example. I think it was John Goldsby talks about it a little bit in the book, but just said it was exhausting to continue to do. And, you know, if there's time later, I can elaborate on physical mediumship. But it absolutely, what Maureen Rayner was talking to you about, there is one medium, which was the earliest medium that I did meet, Dawn Davidesco. She talked about needing to make sure that the spirit guides of, for example, let's say we're applying it to this murder case, the murder case and also the victim, that she would no longer be, her body would no longer be able to take these feelings. And so she made an arrangement for the spirit guide of the murderer, for example, to talk to the talk to her spirit guides and only communicate it through that way, but she could not go through any more of it going through her body. So it's here again, we're seeing this theme of negotiation with the spirit world, and some feel that it is actually a developmental approach. In other words, it takes time to learn how they can use their different faculties. And some of the mediums just learned about their different faculties maybe 10, 15 years later. Do you know what I mean? They thought all they had was clairvoyance, and then they learned that they were healers. Or there's just so much. Not a linear approach.
I wanted to tell a short story before we go on. I had taken clairvoyant lessons when I was in the military. I was in the Air Force in Ohio, and it was very boring in Ohio, so I decided to take clairvoyant lessons. And I was doing a reading. I ran the craniofacial board there as a plastic surgeon. So I was doing a reading for my periodontist who requested a reading, and I was, you know, a new clairvoyant, you know, testing my skills. And so I gave him the name. I said, "Who are the Andersons?" And he said, "Well, that's who I'm going to spend the weekend with." It was a couple he and his wife were going to spend the weekends with. And then I said a few more things. And then I said, "I keep seeing knots being tied in, ropes being tied in knots. I was seeing all these knots." And he got real embarrassed. He turned red. It turned out he had been reading an article on bondage in Playboy. He didn't ask me for any more readings.
Now, can I ask you, how did you get him to admit that? Because that's a problem in our research, is that you might...
They won't admit that. Well, he did. We were friends, you know. I mean,
luckily for you, but you bring up that interesting story that again, is the other variable that I didn't get to mention, was that...
Yeah.
Any of the things that mediums bring through, skeptics don't think that they can, and sometimes, especially in group double-blind studies, they won't admit to them in the group, but they've admitted them to me privately after.
Right, yeah. Well, it's embarrassing sometimes, you know, depending on what it is. Which goes to, it's another point that's very important. There are no secrets. And, you know, this is a shock to a lot of people, especially people who aren't real ethical. But seriously, folks, there are no secrets from this world, the spiritual world.
Absolutely, and the laws are there. And what was like your ghost? You know, your ghost was looking after all the people that were stealing things. But that point really resonates with me, because a lot of the times, can you imagine if a medium was doing that? If you were doing that live, that show, he would never have admitted that. He was your friend. Take that variable out for a second, that this was just Joe Blow on the street.
Standing up there,
it looked like you were a fake medium. But meanwhile, absolute evidence of something that you knew throughout any other physical means of knowing. And,
Think how much fun spirit has with me, just a new person doing clairvoyant stuff, you know, just trying out my skills and giving me that. I mean, isn't that fun?
It is. And the most important thing that we can tell for listeners who are interested, because there's a lot of people that are interested in building their clairvoyance, and the most important thing I can share is that, especially from working with the mediums that I have, is that it's all about the intent. And so to create better well-being in the world, and not just to, for example, find out about other people's lives, or, you know, the intent has to be for positive and greater well-being, and then you're going to attract the different type of spirits. Because sometimes I worry about, a lot of the times I get questions about for evil. There's a great amount of confusion about this work and its association with evil. And again... Mm-hmm. Absolutely attract evil into this work, because just like on the physical plane, we've got a lot of evil people in the world, right, Dr.
We
Cole?
Do.
We've got a lot of evil, we've got a lot of good. Well, it's no different in the spiritual world. And if the practicing the clairvoyance and practicing the communication with the spiritual world, the intent, you have to be able to, first of all, protect yourself with white light, and you have to communicate your intent. And ensure that it's all for greater well-being, either for yourself or for others. Otherwise, you will be attracting people who are in the lower levels of the astral plane and who love to play games. And they will mislead you, and it can lead you into dark places. And so I want people to know that although I write about mediumship from a research perspective, that there are some limitations and considerations one needs to have when they're looking into this.
Yeah, that's very true. And the intent that you have when you go in is very important. If your intentions are not pure, then you're more likely to attract these lower energies and end up with serious problems.
Serious problems. And it's the same with the Ouija board. This is why we have so many problems with the Ouija board, is because there are people that do not have any kind of understanding of energy. And they play the game with the Ouija board, and they do attract very low-level entities that are just playing. They're just playing, and they get themselves, they open up portals because they haven't protected themselves with white light. They don't understand how energy
right.
works. And then they've let some entities or some negative entities into their homes, and that's real. One of the mediums, Faith Grant, who, if I had wanted to go down that path, wanted to take me on to some experiences or excursions and observe the exorcisms that she completes, So I do know that evil does exist, and the energy, the evil energy does exist, but people have to understand that they can create that, or they can create an existence of pure light or pure well-being, and that's something that depends on the way they work with this experience, with that energy and mediumship.
We've been having some communication with higher level spiritual beings who have been telling us that this experiment on Earth, they had no idea that we would forget who we were and forget our connection to Source. And that was really the problem. The free will experiment kind of didn't work so well because we got disconnected from Source. And we all have our own guidance systems through our soul, through our higher self, or through our guides, guardian angels, whichever aspect of spirit you want to, you know, label. But we have guiding principles that we're supposed to be using when we're here. But we forgot we had them. And so, you know, all of the negative emotions come out, and then we feel lost. We feel isolated. We feel lonely, depression, suicide, you know, addiction. All of the things stem from the fact that we think we're alone. And because our thoughts are so powerful, we are alone. You know, I mean, we create that.
We create that.
But we're not. We're not at all. I mean, we're never alone.
We're never alone. And I love that point. You said it so eloquently, and it's so important because I have a lot of... So I put up a YouTube video of one of the experiments that we did, and we have a lot of negative people. I would say maybe about 50% who feel that what we're talking about is actually false, and in fact, sometimes is there as a money-making scheme. And it's just exactly what you said, is they've forgotten. There's no connection.
They forgot who they are, yeah.
That connection. And that's the only reason why I am so on the path of trying to explore this more in a scientific way to help those people that are skeptics understand a bit more, is for exactly the same reason that you said. If we remembered who we were and that we come to the physical plane for tests, we come to the physical plane to, so we come before, I talk about soul contracts prior to being incarnated. So, for example, you may have come to learn the lesson of patience, for example, in another one.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come here, let's say, you know, the physical world, what happens is you're challenged with so many. Either you feel it's oppression, or you want to get somewhere and you're challenged and you can't get where you want to go because your test is patience. If you knew that this was a test for patience and that once you had achieved it, your soul grows in the next life, you may not feel so negative. You may not hurt others because you're not
right.
where you're going. You may not take those drugs because you think that, you know what, this is my one chance and this is my one time. I'm a failure. I'm going to hurt others because I'm not getting what I'm getting, and I'm feeling that other people are getting things, and I can get, you know, hurt them to make them feel as badly as I do. All of the things that we do to hurt each other on this physical plane would be significantly reduced if we understood it was a test. Almost like, and the only way I can help lay people understand this is because through movies, unfortunately, Dr. Cove, we have these movies that we can help people understand because they watch these movies, and like The Matrix, that the idea of the
right.
Matrix, that concept was that, you know, there are other realities. Some of it's like an illusion. And people kind of get it then. They say, oh, okay, some of this, it's not actually real. It's our ability to see how we do with making our soul challenged on the physical world. When we transition forward into the next continuum, we may still need to work on patience, or we may learn that, you know, we've done enough in that area, and on it goes to the next lesson and how we're going to, you know, in the different planes of existence, you can either continue on in that plane of existence, either strengthening, or you may decide that you need to come to the graduate university, which is Earth, which is the most difficult, to actually test another area to help your soul grow. And if we understand that, I really believe that we wouldn't have wars. We wouldn't hurt each other as much as we do.
Yeah, the some of the other lessons that are important for people to understand, the lessons are in responsibility, patience, unconditional love, and forgiveness. Those are the four big ones.
Those are the four big ones. And I think the hardest is, you know, for people to love their enemies. I think we're all, I would even say I'm having, I still need to learn that one, the love your enemies one. And because I know why I need to, I feel that, you know, we're likely to come back and it will be a bit more difficult to learn. I push myself to do that under every circumstance and try to encourage others to do it. But again, as you say, because most people don't understand, first of all, the concept of energy and multiple lives, you see? The Eastern societies are still lagging in that area. I think we're becoming a lot better, and luckily for us, because the Western tradition in medicine has infiltrated the Eastern side of the world, I think now we're better able to talk more about energy and mediumship, because I feel, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, because you're more in the medical side of things, is do you feel people are more open to admitting to the use of alternative healing energies versus being able to admit that they saw someone to communicate with someone in the afterworld? Which one do you think they would see as more credible, I wonder?
Well, the alternative medical. But, you know, in your book, you said that 70% of Americans have seen a medium. That is amazing.
Yes, it's high. It's actually very high.
That's very high. But they don't admit to it, that's for sure.
They don't admit to it because, again, it's not...
It's not socially acceptable yet. That's true.
And what is amazing about our time and why I'm so excited about this is if you've noticed, there are a number of people that have esteemed backgrounds in the medical community, including yourself, that are not afraid to bring these things out into the open. We have now near-death experiences. We have where we have a number of medical, the big one was Eben Alexander in Proof of Heaven. You know, you've got astringent, in the medical community, you have astringent background of believing that consciousness resides in the brain, and then you have a neurosurgeon who died and comes back to tell everybody, we were all wrong.
Right.
Consciousness continues.
Yeah.
Everything I learned in medical school about that was incorrect, and that is a game changer, isn't it?
It is. I wanted to ask you if you had heard about the experiment for proof of life after death that involved the chess game that was played during the 80s.
Oh.
This is one you should look up. It was actually published. I'll give it to you briefly. This was told to me by the laser physicist that established the remote viewing program for the military.
Oh, Manigo.
Not Joe, but his boss. I'm blanking on the name, but I'll get it in a minute.
Okay.
But anyway, this person, this physicist that told me about this, he was not part of the experiment, but his brother-in-law was a chess grandmaster, Bobby Fischer. You might have heard of him. Anyway. They wanted to prove the existence of life after death, but they didn't want to use information. They wanted to use a skill, so they chose chess. So they asked a medium to go into the afterlife and locate a chess grandmaster. And he located a Hungarian chess grandmaster in the afterlife who had been a prominent chess player. And then through the medium, who did not know how to play chess, they played a game of chess with a current living grandmaster. Now, it took a long time. I think it took 2 years because they didn't have the internet back then, so they kind of had to do it by slow mail. And basically, the Hungarian said that he wanted, it was very, very important for people to understand about the afterlife. That's why he agreed to do the experiment.
Right.
And he went 60 moves before he conceded to the living grandmaster. And he said that he was a little rusty because he hadn't played chess in a while, which was interesting. But Bobby Fischer looked at the whole move, you know, the whole game, and said only a grandmaster could have played that game.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's absolutely incredible.
So that is proof of a skill, which is, you know, there's a lot of problems with information, and I'm sure you ran into them during your studies. You know, people say there's telepathy and there's, you know, subconscious signals and, you know, all of those things that can, that the skeptics bring up.
Yes.
But, or even, you know, research, you know, fraud, you know,
yes.
Somebody
oh, yes.
going and finding out, you know, like it, as if they have time to do that. But, but a skill cannot be, a skill at a grandmaster level in chess cannot be faked.
And I can see the added value. Yeah, absolutely. I can see the added value of that experiment. I definitely would like to look that up.
Yeah, that physicist's name was Russell Targ. Targ. Yeah, yeah.
That one I haven't heard, but absolutely. But you know, and even in when you were talking about that particular experiment, I mean, I was thinking of the out of body experiments, though, that have also been done, that have substantiated an afterlife. Because, so for example, those individuals in the medical community who felt that the near death experiment could have been a phenomenon of a dying brain, we have, for example, an experiment. Just as, when you were talking about the experiment, this one jumped into my head. It was with Dr. Charles Tart in 1968. He had a research participant named Miss Z. Who was in just a laboratory setting. She had learned how to project herself out of her body while she was alive. So it's not a dead body. And he had already identified a 5-digit random number, and she was able to go project herself out of her body and come back with the correct 5-digit number. And so again, it's for the skeptical community. So you brought up the chess game. You know, you can't emanate a skill that quickly. And then in this case, it isn't the case of the dying brain. If somebody is able to go into a different level of consciousness, obtain information, and come back to the physical world. So if people are skeptical, and they should be, because, you know, there are fake mediums out there, and unfortunately, I don't see them as disproportionate to any other fake types that were fraud that happened in other kinds of enterprises.
True.
But the bottom line is we have so many complementary studies now of near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, the remote viewing, past life regression therapy, electrical voice phenomena. When you put it together, I cannot understand why we continue to deny or suppress or not share this information or allow it to be more socially acceptable?
Well, I'll tell you what it takes. You want to hear what it takes?
Please, tell me. Tell us.
It takes personal experience.
Yep.
I mean, you know, you've heard the saying, to those who believe, no proof is necessary. To those who don't believe, no proof is possible. You have to have personal experience. The oral surgeon I used to work with didn't believe in life after death until, you know, she saw a ghost come into her room. She thought it was a person. I mean, a lot of times ghosts look just like living people.
Yes.
Came over dressed in Victorian-type clothing, came over, looked at her, turned around and walked through the wall. Well, she called me because she figured, you know, nobody else would believe her. But she was a believer after she had that experience.
Absolutely.
It takes personal experience. And if the skeptics are not open to personal experience because it would disrupt their being too much, the very fabric of their belief system, it won't happen because, you know, spirit is not going to do that. Spirit's not going to traumatize people.
It's true. And it's interesting. I've come across a lot of, because I worked with non-believers, it was a unique sort of area of my study because I was finding too many. I thought that my results were quite high in terms of evidence mm-hmm. for survival of consciousness, and so I wanted to do a control with non-believers who were male under a double-blind setting, just to be able to control to see, do we get similar levels, similar patterns of high level of evidence that this is mm-hmm. substantiated. And it's interesting, in just doing a couple of focus groups with them after, is they indicated that it doesn't necessarily mean when they say that they don't believe. They might believe in aspects of the afterlife. So you might have got somebody who believed in a ghost, but they still don't believe that you can communicate with the dead. You see the difference? Mm-hmm. So it's not, for them, it's not an all or nothing thing. They might believe that they can go out of body, because I had some of the non-believers have their own out-of-body experiences, but said, you know what, it wasn't till I had this non-believer's experiment with a medium do I now see that absolutely they're communicating with someone outside of the room, because there was just absolutely no way they could have
right.
this high-level evidence. But so you see, the question about does one believe in the afterlife is much more complex. It's not just that
yes or no, right?
Yeah,
that's
the
true.
Aspect of communicating with the dead as mm-hmm. a problem for people, I think, because they might believe that they go on, but they don't mm-hmm. understand that the issue of dead. They think you can't
communicate
with someone who's dead because they're dead.
Well, I have a theory about skeptics. The skeptics that are not like unbiased, okay, but you know, very biased skeptics. And I've met them. And what I see are people who are fear-based and very secretive and very much, I would say, invested in the idea that the third dimension is a box and it's very tight and it's the only reality. Because if everything is really known, that's a very scary thought to them.
If everything is known.
Yeah, if your thoughts are known to the spiritual world.
Oh, that, okay.
That's
yeah.
very, very scary, because they have attack thoughts. They have negative thoughts. They have deviant sexual thoughts. They have this, they have that. They can't accept a world in which the spiritual world has access to their thoughts.
And what would scare them even more, and I love your theory, I love that, because what's even scary to people, and because now we're going through ascension, where our consciousness is now rising even
mm-hmm.
more, what people are going to understand is, so it's not just the spirit world that's going to be able to see through you, it's each of us.
It's everybody else, that's
everybody
right.
Everybody else.
So that's right,
liar,
yeah. It's about time.
Yeah, if you're a liar and you're a thief, or you're constantly having negative
that's
thoughts,
right, yeah.
It actually show, because we're now able to, even though some people are not aware of it, we are picking up
mm-hmm.
energy better. We actually, the behavior is just much more salient to us, because we know how
mm-hmm.
to use our different energies. We don't know how we know. I've had people in my office setting who are, and I'm talking about in my government work with criminology, who I know
mm-hmm.
have any knowledge of this stuff, have said, I could feel in that meeting that these people were totally against what we were saying, and they don't realize that they're using a form of
mm-hmm.
clairvoyance. And they're not
right.
really
they
realizing
are.
Because all of us are we're raising our consciousness, and so our abilities are getting stronger, and we don't know why we know things that we didn't know before. So nobody can
yeah.
hide anything. Nobody can hide with lies and
mm-hmm.
negativity anymore. So it's interesting what you brought up about but we're all, yeah.
I have a short story to tell you about a criminal thing, which is interesting. I was in surgery, and a lot of times when I'm in surgery, my techs will start asking me questions. Like, you know, you remember the Olympic bomber that was
yes.
in Atlanta here? Well, my
yes.
tech asked me where he was, and I just said something. And it actually, I can't even remember what I said. I think it was in North or South Carolina. But the city that I named was where he was found. I mean, it just jumps in my head. You know, I don't know where it comes from.
Right.
But somebody asked me about Saddam Hussein, where he was, you know, when he was hiding. And I go, Turkey? Turkey. Why would he be in Turkey?
Right.
Well, he was in Turkey, but I was interpreting it as Turkey.
Oh, so what was the initial interpretation? It was Turkey was the interpretation.
Well, I said, Turkey? Why would he be in Turkey?
Right.
He was found in Turkey.
But it was different. It was spelled differently.
Right, but I didn't know Turkey existed.
Turkey.
I just knew Turkey. Yeah, yeah. So the idea is that you can hear very, very specific information about the criminals. When I was over at the doctor's lounge, and on CNN they were playing that sniper stuff that was happening around Washington D.C.
Yes.
And I said to everybody in the room, I said, well, they're not going to find him because he's in a real tight space with a gun pointing out of the back of the vehicle. And that's exactly what I mean, I saw it. It was really amazing.
You saw it.
So evidently I could go into crime if I wanted.
Right. And it was interesting, that part that you indicated, that Turkey story.
Turkey, yeah.
Of the interpretation, and that is so hard for mediums.
It is.
It's because you are still you're in the physical realm, you're getting information, and then you start to immediately apply your physical self, and that's where the mediums who actually do this on a regular basis have learned that I have to simply say it as I get it, but let people know it is you that has to interpret the information.
Right.
I'm getting it as it is. Once the medium starts to interpret themselves, that's where in my research I found the evidence level.
They go wrong, yeah. Yeah.
And
the medium doesn't have the files. We call them files. Like if spirit's communicating engineering information, you have to have the files. You have to have the know-how to interpret that data. I'm real good at medical information, obviously, you know, as a surgeon and having been going through anatomy class, I'm real good at physiology and anatomy, so I can get real specific information, whereas my other friends who are mediums who don't have any medical information will go, well, where's the gallbladder? Like, they don't even know what side of the body the gallbladder's on. You know, it's hard for them to... to bring in information about
that. That's interesting.
About that.
I don't know if you got to the part with John Pothia, John Pothia, who is not a doctor like you. He had the ability to look at the colors inside of the body and diagnose the problem, but he had trouble at the beginning because he couldn't name. He didn't know the anatomy that well, but he could just say,
look at an anatomy book.
Yeah, exactly. There was, but he was always sort of right when he was able to check. Medical, and because it's all colors, and that's what John Pothia's case study teaches us. And this is the area of study that I'm working on now, which is healing. And the current research that I'm working on is the efficacy of energy healing. Because I think that's sort of another aspect that we're really, really as a society need to be able to embrace more well.
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is.
Oh, it's very exciting. But again, how do we test that? But I think the most important thing was when John Pothia started talking about it, he said it was so easy for him. If people just knew that it was colors, different colors dictated the different health problems. But in Canada here, none of them, like for a medium like him, he cannot actually prescribe anything. It's against the law. He does it also. He also respects the medical community and does say very clearly in this case study that in all respects, although he diagnosed, he always suggested that client go and see their doctor and use his information and the medicals in a complementary way, never as a replacement.
There's another phenomenon I want to mention because I've seen it described both by people like Noreen Rayner. She described it doing criminal work, and then my medical intuitives have described it doing medical intuition work.
Right.
Spirit has the ability to take the medium's mind and go very microscopic or very universal. So you can get like a God's eye view of something, like when you're trying to figure out where the body's buried, you know, they'll take Noreen up and show her, you know, that it's 2 miles from this bridge and, you know, triangulate something with landmarks.
Right.
And yet they can take the medical intuitives down to the molecular level to show them something.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is, and I think that it's extremely consistent with what I found as well, is that a lot of mediums, even themselves, for example, didn't think that the spiritual time was in sync with physical time. So they thought that when they were giving predictions or a time, they thought that it a lot of them would tell me, don't bother testing that, Donna, because, you know, it's a non-local reality in the spirit world and they can't tell time. Well, given the example that you just talked about, being able to move from a very, macro to micro level, it was exactly mm-hmm. the same with the mediums. They indicated that when they needed to, they were able to get a specific time, a specific date. And I talked about in one of the mm-hmm. cases, the medium actually said Saturday, September 22nd, and ran up to the calendar to see.
Saturday, yeah.
If it really falls on Saturday, because that's extremely
right.
specific. We're not even talking about But absolutely, they're able to move from very high to very low, depending on the need. It's always depending
right.
on and the relevancy. So
that's true. So we have a lot more to learn, as you know, in this field. I think criminology will be totally changed when we know how to do this. I mean,
absolutely.
you know the possibilities there,
absolutely.
And I think that medicine will be totally changed. Totally.
Absolutely.
I presented a lecture at the Global Humanitarian Summit on saving money through using these methods, you know,
wow.
using a medical intuitive first to screen and then getting specific tests to diagnose rather than running $10,000 to $15,000 worth of negative testing. You know, I'm seeing these women who have toxic illnesses from their breast implants come in with total body MRIs almost and brain scans and all these other things that are negative, you know, because you're not going to find a toxic chemical poisoning on an MRI. You know, it's just not going to happen.
Right.
So
right.
to save money, we need a better system. And you know how much money is wasted in criminology. Good Lord.
Absolutely.
All the leads that they have to, I mean, it's so methodical and systematic. Why not just bypass all of that and go right for the money, you know?
Right
I mean,
for the money. Yeah, and I think there, again, you know, all the variables that we would have to look at. And I just want to thank you for all that type of work that you're doing because, again, you're coming from a background, you know, being a surgeon, you know, is an esteemed career. And then yet at the same time, you're able to talk so openly about how we can start to use mediums or other what we would consider non-traditional practitioners. And believe me, we can't do it without the people who have backgrounds in research or esteemed careers, because otherwise it's just going to continue to lay into the sort of the fraudulent realm. These people are a bit crazy, you know.
Mm-hmm. True. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour, Donna. Would you like to give her contact information?
Yes. So, if anybody's interested to learn about a bit more about the research, my website is www.medium7.com, and I'll be posting more information about the healing research for practitioners who want to undergo that study, or to send me a specific email to Metaphysics Research is medium7, and that's just the number, medium7book@yahoo.ca.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We've been talking to Donna Smith Moncrieve, her book Medium 7, Evidence of the Afterlife and Predictions, good scientific work about what direction we need to go in order to develop this, and a great book for anybody who wants to learn more about spirituality and metaphysics and information for their own life lessons from mediums. I think that's an important thing that people ought to consider. Thanks so much for joining us, Don. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really enjoyed my time being with you here. Good talking to you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care.
Next week we have Mystic Pete on the Mystic Pete Chronicles, Book 1, Sex and Mysticism. On the 21st, Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life, Bonnie Glass Coffin. And Becky Chambers will be talking about whole body vibration, the future of good health. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week.